Welcome to Voices in Value-Based Care. I'm Matt Fusen. Thanks for tuning in. The movement to value-based care is revolutionizing how healthcare providers get reimbursed for delivery of care. On this program, we explore stories from the field about how real organizations are dealing with this change. As always, you can follow the show on Twitter at #VoicesInVBC and follow SPH on Twitter at SPH Analytics. On the program today, I'm talking with Stuart Fisk, nurse practitioner and director of the Center for Inclusion Health at Allegheny Health Network, and Ann Dabro Woods, nurse practitioner, adjunct faculty, and chief nurse of Walters Kluwer Health Learning and Research in Practice. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you both. Very interested in hearing about your work in social determinants of health. It's becoming a hotter and hotter topic of late. But before we dig into that, let's hear a little bit about yourselves. Ann, would you mind telling us about yourself and how you got to where we are today?
Sure. Hi, this is Ann Dabro Woods. Like you said, I'm the chief nurse of Walters Kluwer Health Learning Research and Practice, but I'm also a practicing nurse practitioner. I've been a nurse practitioner since 1998 and a practicing nurse since 1984. So I've been doing this for a while. One of the things that I've been really working on is looking at how we as Walters Kluwer Company can support clinicians in their ability to recognize social determinants of health and also really put things, new things into their practice that are going to improve patient outcomes based on the social determinants of health. As a clinician, it's really important to me because I get to see it every time I practice that social determinants of health are so key to what we do, because one of the things that we've recognized is that over 70% of health outcomes are actually impacted by where people are born, they live, they work, their age. I mean, that's just an incredible thing. And you look at all the different things that are around them, from their economic status and everything else, it really makes an impact. We know that healthypeople.gov has put together a really nice site on social determinants of health. And I think that's a great resource for people to get to and to use in their practice.
Awesome. And that's a great number, the 70%. It makes sense when you think about it, right? But it's not something that's often talked about. Stuart, could you tell us about yourself?
Sure. I'm also a nurse practitioner. My background is largely in the area of HIV medicine policy, research, and prevention for the last 30 years almost. I started as a hospice nurse in San Francisco, taking care of people with HIV and AIDS in the early 1990s, and was working mostly with people who were living in single room occupancy hotels, drug users, people who were involved in sex work, people who were homeless, immigrants and refugees, populations that were really marginalized and excluded from the healthcare system for a number of reasons. And, you know, it's really where my work has stuck for most of the rest of my career. I helped start the HIV clinic here at Allegheny Health Network starting in 1999. I've been directing that program since then. Been a nurse practitioner since 2007, and we've built our clinical program in the HIV clinic really on the principles of the social determinants of health, that those are the things that drive health outcomes, that drive patient adherence, that drive patient health and well-being and quality of life. And so through the lens and through the work of the social determinants of health, we created a clinical program that really takes care of some incredibly complicated people, both socially and physically and behaviorally. And we have some of the best outcomes, as good outcomes as anybody in the country. We've really learned that taking care of the most complex patients helps us take care of everybody. I'm currently the director of the Center for Inclusion Health, which is a center at Allegheny Health Network that really works to provide access to high quality care for populations of people, many of which I've worked with over the years, to get better access to high quality care. And the work of the Center for Inclusion Health, again, is really driven by the social determinants of health and how we address those in the clinical setting.
Thank you for that. And we're going to dig into more of a lot of the topics that you mentioned. But before we go there, always helpful for me and for the audience to kind of set a baseline. And I want to ask you both, what are social determinants of health and why are they so important? Ann?
Sure. So social determinants of health have been defined as conditions in the environment in which people are born, live, learn, work, play, worship, what their age is, It's all those things that affect a person that are so important. You know, we used to think that if we could just educate people, you know, whether in the hospital, if they're in a clinic, that, you know, everything would be okay and we'd be driving outcomes. And what we learned, that's not true at all. You can't just treat a person. You got to treat the community. So it's all those things that affect the person. That's going to make a real difference in the type of outcomes they're going to have.
And I know you had mentioned in your intro, healthypeople.org, but just to let our audience know, there's a recent study that was just published out there that has a lot of really interesting data. Stuart, I know your organization, as you mentioned, is heavily involved. What are you guys, what is your approach and what are your thoughts on social determinants of health?
Yeah, so, you know, again, the Center for Inclusion Health was started about 5 years ago with the really the express purpose of driving better health outcomes in excluded populations. So we're talking about immigrants and refugees, LGBTQ people, people who are homeless, people who are incarcerated, people who have food insecurity, all these kind of social domains that we know impact on their ability to achieve not just healthcare outcomes, but actually to achieve health and quality of life. So we're working on a number of projects. We're incubating programs that actually bring the social determinants of health into a screening process. So we built into our Epic healthcare record a screening tool, which actually will go fully live this year in a few months, that's going to screen for 11 of the social determinant domains. And I can go through those. We'll screen for financial insecurity, stress, food insecurity, housing insecurity, depression, substance use, intimate partner violence, transportation needs, social connections, physical activity, and health literacy. So by screening with two, really for most of those domains, we can screen with two questions. We can do it quickly at the beginning of the visit. A lot of the times our medical assistants are doing that screening. And then once we identify these needs, we can begin to develop a plan that incorporates those social determinants into the plan of care for diabetes, for HIV, for mental health treatment. So we can begin to really address those things. And we've also then begun to develop programs that actually provide food for people, provide housing for people, assist with transportation, get people out of unsafe relationships and domestic environments. So all these things we can begin working on because we now know about them.
That's excellent. And having that data part of the chart, right, as opposed to somewhere else, we talked about obviously makes a big difference. And Anne, when we were talking, there's a big part of this that's geographically driven for standard determinants of health as well. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure, really. Zip code makes a big difference. Where you live makes a big difference in what your outcomes are going to be. And people that live in the same, you know, jurisdiction but have different zip codes can have very glaringly different outcomes. And, you know, it behooves us as clinicians to be really aware of that so that we can make sure we meet our patients' needs. You know, one of the things that we found in a research study that we did through Walters Kluwer is that up to 50% of people don't take their medications, how they're prescribed. They either won't fill them because they can't afford it, or they're going to stretch out. So instead of taking their pill maybe once a day, they're going to do it every other day or every 2 days because they simply can't afford to get their prescription filled. So as a clinician, I need to know where this patient lives, what resources are available, and what's their economic status. Because if I have an opportunity to prescribe something that's a generic drug versus something that's a brand name, it's going to cost them less money, I have a better chance of compliance. So really, geographic and financial is a huge issue that we need to start paying more attention to.
Makes a lot of sense. And Stuart, when we were preparing, you talked about the difference between social determinants of health, the standard name, and more in line with your thinking, which are social variables. Tell us more about that.
It's interesting because a lot of us in nursing particularly have been dealing with these social issues in our patients for a long time. And we've, you know, called them many different things. But, you know, the term now, social determinants of health, these social issues do determine people's health outcomes. But we also have to remember that they're variable, that we can move the bar on these social determinants. So we can change whether people are housing insecure and have a place to live. We can change whether they have heat in their house. Now, we can't necessarily do that as a nurse practitioner, But we can certainly begin to work with social referral networks to connect our patients to resources that can help with them. A lot of providers have said to me, you know, I can't change where my patient lives. Like, what am I supposed to do, buy them a house? Well, no, but if I can connect them to better housing resources, for example, through a technological link through the electronic health record that gives me their, you know, where they live, what housing resources are available to them, then I can begin to change the variable. I can move the bar on that. If nothing else, I can just understand, look, this patient doesn't have a place to live. I can't give them a medication that has to be stably refrigerated. I have to do something else. I can change the plan of care to adapt to that person's social environment. But I have to know what their social environment is, so I have to ask the question.
And that makes sense. And we were also talking about, so often I know myself, when you're thinking about this, you're thinking the beginning state is, you know, somebody's in a poor situation. But as we talked about many times, it's, I was in a great situation for 20 years and I lost my job. So now all of a sudden I'm in a different place. So the variables aren't just up, it is up and down and in and out, and people's experience level with those variables is quite different, right? Depending on where they're at in the journey. So definitely makes a lot of sense understanding that, and that it's a variable, not a determined your outcome or determined your fate, for lack of a better word. What is changing in the healthcare space, and why are social determinants of health receiving more focus now? And when we talked, you talked a little bit about Affordable Care Act. Take us through that further.
Right. So the Affordable Care Act was signed into law by President Obama back in 2010, and it changed the way we reimburse for healthcare. We moved from a pay-for-service to a pay-for-performance or outcome, which everybody agreed is certainly the way to go. But the issue with it, we all thought that, oh, if we just, you know, look at our outcomes alone, you know, we'll be, and put those interventions in place, we'll be able to drive great outcomes. And what we've seen is that's not true at all. So people are really looking now at the social determinants. As I said, up to 70% of, you know, outcomes are affected by the social determinants or social variables of health. And we need to start paying attention to that. And that's something that our younger nurses and physicians know. We certainly saw that in a Walters Core study that we did that showed the younger folks who are just graduating or have just graduated in the last 5 years are aware of that because it's being taught to them. But the clinicians who have been in practice for a while, they're not as aware of it. And we need to make sure that people stop and ask critical questions about the social determinants with every interaction with the patient. Because as you know, you said, things can change day to day. And every time you see a patient, you should ask them what's going on in your life so that you can help them. And as a healthcare, as our healthcare institutions get larger and larger, they need to realize that depending on location, you know, a center city hospital may have quite different social determinants affecting their population than real rural hospitals. So we also got to be aware of that as well.
Stuart, when we were talking, part of this needs to be sustainable, right? You're talking about this. This really needs to be built into the model. Expand on that for us.
So, and this really comes from our approach at the Center for Inclusion Health. Of we're transforming existing care spaces to take care of people with a lot of social complexity. So that means we're not creating ghetto clinics where the homeless go or where the transgendered people go or that. We're really transforming the way we do primary care, specialty care, and inpatient care so that anybody who walks through the door at any time has the availability of a multidisciplinary team that can help address their health needs. So in a sense that by creating health settings where the most complex patients can walk in and we can deal with their social determinants, we're able to deal with even people, you know, I mean, you were talking earlier about the social determinants changing and that, you know, an executive or a lawyer or even a doctor can lose their job, become homeless, end up with a substance use problem that needs to be addressed. And so now we have a health system that can address all of that at any time. The problem is that you need multidisciplinary teams that function together, and they need to be embedded in the health setting in order to do that, and that costs money. So we need to change the reimbursement structures so that those teams are reimbursed for the work that they do, not just the physician, not just the provider that bills, but across the board, there's reimbursement that supports all the members of those teams. That's a greater outlay upfront in terms of investing in people, But what we have shown and what we'll continue to show through our work at the Center for Inclusion Health, and this is happening around the country, is that the return on investment is ultimately good. And that money needs to come back from the payer systems to help support the work that we're doing. So really, for a health system, particularly integrated finance and delivery systems, where the payer and the provider are part of the same organization, you have to build those social determinants into the bones of the business model and understand the return on investment. In our enterprise at Allegheny Health Network and Highmark Health and also Gateway Health, which is our Medicaid managed care organization that we work with closely, we're beginning to do that, to really bake those social determinants in, understand the return on investment for addressing those, so that if we get into the business of trying to deal with housing issues or food insecurity issues, we can do that. We've built food centers at two of our hospitals, and we'll be building them out into seven other hospitals eventually, where people can, when they screen as being food insecure, will get a referral to the food center. They can walk right there on that hospital campus to a food center that's run by a registered dietitian that has access to your health record. So we can really begin to close the loop on that.
Word said that's really, really important is that Allegheny Health System realize they need to go where the patients are. Go to where the people are. You can't expect the people always to get to you because they may not have access to care. So what Allegheny did is they put the clinics where the people are, and I think that's really been a great turning point. And I do absolutely agree with you, Stuart. We need to find a way to show how our other clinicians that can't bill specifically for services, so whether it be nurses, social workers, dietitians, all those different really critical people who are involved in patient care, how do we show their value? You know, this healthcare system today is all about the money, and sometimes it's really hard to put a sign of value if it doesn't come with a dollar with it. We need to find a better way to define the value of all those people, because without an interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary team, you know, handling all these social determinant issues, bottom line is we're not going to drive our outcomes. And if you can't drive your outcomes, you're not going to get the reimbursement.
And that's really interesting. So, you know, I've been involved in a lot of models for the past 5 or 6 years. And as we've been talking about this, and even just on right now, it hit me. I don't recall seeing anything baked into any of these alternative payment models coming out of CMMI or other places where a core requirement is for every visit you ask standard social determinant of health questions, right? I've never seen it. There's MedRec is a big one, right? But not in this case, which is really interesting and kind of sparked some additional thought in my mind. Right now, I haven't seen a lot of movement on the CMS side to reimburse for these sorts of things. It seems like they're starting to open up the wallet a little bit more for care management, right? And they're providing some dollars for clinicians to use as they see fit. Do you think we will see more of that out of CMS? And do you think CMS will ultimately be the driver of providing some additional funding to address these problems? Do you think it'll be commercial? And this is just pure kind of speculation, but I'd love your opinion.
CMS does sometimes drive these decisions across the payer spectrum, but I think what we're beginning to see is actually health systems like ours and a number of others around the country that are beginning to take this issue on themselves, because they're beginning to understand that there is a return on investment in addressing the social determinants. I don't know, Anne, what you think, but I think that our health system is trying to really figure out how to survive. Our health system is in trouble, no matter how you look at it. And I think they're looking for solutions. And I think this is the right one.
Well, I agree. So I work for a big health system here in the Philadelphia area. And we have many hospitals that are both inner city as well as rural. I have to say, you know, one of the things I've seen a big movement from is we're getting away from just take care of the one patient, but moving to an area where we're taking care of the community. Because if we don't start looking at the community resources and addressing the social determinants, then we're not going to get the outcomes we need, and then they're not going to get the, you know, reimbursement that they want to have within the health system. But what's even more important for us as clinicians, we're not going to see patients achieving the health that they deserve. And from a clinician standpoint, it's more important to me to see people have better outcomes then get the reimbursement. But the bottom line is you drive your outcomes, you drive the reimbursement. So we have to look at this at a more holistic approach and realize we're treating the community, not just one person at a time.
And that just reminded me, Stuart, when we were talking yesterday, I think you had mentioned that your organization was contributing a large sum of money to build a facility that you all won't run, right? A shelter, I believe it was. Kind of goes along the lines of this, right? Hey, we're not, this $5 million is an investment in the community and the health of the community ultimately helps the health system. Do I have that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, so there were several different organizations that have decided to invest in trying to find some solution to the growing homeless problem in Pittsburgh. And they've decided to kind of join forces and build a homeless shelter. Two of those entities are health systems because they've begun to recognize the need for population health. And, you know, that the social determinants really drive most of that health of populations as well as individuals. So I do think that we're beginning to recognize that we have to address these issues on a population level. And it's going to take money from a lot of different sources, but ultimately it needs to be sustainable. And the people doing the work can't continually chase a grant here and a philanthropic donation here. Again, it has to be baked into the business plan of the health systems.
Let's shift a little bit and talk about technology. Often on the podcast, there's at least some level of technology or technical component. And, you know, the big question, how is technology changing how these social determinants are managed and addressed? And tell us your thoughts.
So I think one of the greatest inventions that we've seen is the electronic healthcare record. Now, every clinician will tell you it makes documentation more difficult and challenging, but the one good thing that it's done is it's really put the social determinants of health right in the forefront. And the majority of the EHR systems all have those questions embedded so that when you admit a patient or you discharge a patient, you're taking a look at those. We never had that information before in one place. So whether you're taking care of a patient in acute care, in primary care, rehab, long-term care, you have access to that information. So for the first time, we're really able to be playing off of the same book, so to speak, in having that information on our patients. We just never had that before. And I think that's going to start to make a big difference in what we can do for our patients. You have to have the data to be able to implement the change and see where the issues are. And now we have the data, and now we can help find the solutions to fix some of these things.
And Stuart, you'd mentioned a little bit earlier, I want to go back to it, the referral, you know, for food insecurities. You go a little bit deeper into that, and it's what's really interesting, it's a closed loop referral system, and the person on the food services side gets the information about the patient. It's not just go see this person and tell them I sent you over, and then you're all starting from scratch again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a traditional referral to a food pantry, you know, by a social worker in a clinic or on the inpatient side, kind of send that person off with no information to the food pantry, and they get whatever they get. When you connect that person to a registered dietitian that's sitting in front of the electronic health record and has that person's health information, they know they're diabetic. They know that their hemoglobin A1C is 9.7 and it needs to come down. They know they're hypertensive. They know they maybe have borderline heart failure or COPD, all of which are nutrition-sensitive conditions that need to be adjusted. So you can begin to really talk about specific foods that people need and actually hand it to them. So we actually purchase in our food centers not only the regular food, we get food from food banks, but we also, through those food banks, purchase high-quality food like fresh produce, meats, and things like that, and give those out. Mm-hmm. We also teach people how to cook them, how to use them. We give them utensils to cook with because, frankly, a lot of times people don't have the cooking utensils. Okay. So then you can begin to really look at the change in the hemoglobin A1C, the change in the blood pressure. We've delivered close to 40,000 meals through the first food center that we opened a year and a half ago. And we have seen significant changes in health outcomes because we give food to the whole household, not just to the patient. So really the whole household is benefiting and you don't have somebody who's kind of like sitting off in the corner trying to eat their high quality food while everyone else eats Cheetos. But you really change the culture of food in the household. And then you really do see, we have been able to demonstrate significant through the data that we get from the electronic health record improvements in health. And that then drives the conversation about return on investment.
As always, I would love to just keep talking and talking, but I'm going to do a quick, we have about 2 minutes left, get both of your quick thoughts because we talked yesterday and the importance, and you touched a little bit on it earlier, is the education piece. Just, give us your 30 to 45 second thoughts on what we can do and what we need to do from an education and training.
Sure. So I think we need to do two things. Within our schools of nursing and medicine, et cetera, we need to be teaching our new clinicians about the social determinants of health and how to impact those and help patients be able to achieve health. And I think also on the flip side, we have to talk to and educate through lifelong learning our practicing clinicians who maybe didn't have the information when they went to school. It's really important that we educate them on the importance of this and the importance of readdressing the social determinants with every interaction you have with your patient, because things can change day to day. So I think that's really where we need to put our efforts. I will say at Walters Kluwer, we did a study, and the younger clinicians were all aware of the social determinants of health and how important they were. The people have been in practice for a while. It wasn't on their radar as high up as with younger clinicians, certainly because, they haven't been, exposed to it in an educational program. So I think it's a great opportunity for lifelong learning to educate people on it.
Stuart, anything to add to that?
Yeah, so we've built the Center for Inclusion Health on three pillars, really: care transformation, data evaluation, and education. So we have a residency track for medical students and residents to come through our programs. They can actually spend 2 years of their residency specializing in the work that we do. Those are medical residents. And it's become an incredibly popular program. People actually are applying to our residency programs to go through the Center for Inclusion Health track.
Awesome.
We train all types of medical learners to work in the populations. We take them to homeless camps. We take them into the jail. We take them, to work in various populations and really learn about it. The interesting thing there is that those are medical learners that are sitting with those older providers, and they're actually teaching them. So our attendings that are supposed to be training residents are now learning from the residents about these issues. So we're really closing that loop as well.
That is awesome. Unfortunately, that brings us to the end of time today. Thank you both so much. Really appreciate it. A topic that doesn't get enough focus at the moment. Feels like we're starting to make some more. As with all guests, hopefully we can have a chance to catch up in the future, kind of do a check-in and see how things are progressing. Thank you to the audience for tuning in. Really appreciate it, as always. You can learn more about the show on the programs page of healthcarenowradio.com. And lend your voice to conversation on Twitter at #VoicesInVBC. And be sure to follow SPH on Twitter at SPH Analytics. Again, I'm Matt Fusen, bringing you Voices in Value-Based Care You Should Hear. Until next time, have a great week. Thank you.